My name is Stacy. I'm a grateful recovering codependent.
My name is Terry. I'm also codependent.
And we're here tonight to share my story about my journey to and through recovery for my codependent and enabling behaviors. My hope is that you will be able to see the instances of these behaviors and how things didn't change until I changed. I want to introduce you to my son, Skylar. I didn't forget. I do sometimes, but I didn't forget tonight. This is my son, Skylar. He's not here tonight, so I want to be able to show you a picture of him. And this is my husband, Terry, who's my Vanna White for tonight. He's becoming very good at that job, aren't you? So Skylar is my only child, and he was a heroin addict and an active addiction for about 5 years, beginning at the age of 15. Skylar was born on December 9th, 1987. I had a wonderful, uneventful pregnancy, and aside from a 5-week stint of colic, Skylar was a very happy and bright baby. I have to admit, though, that I had Skylar for extremely codependent reasons. I married Skylar's dad when I was 22 years old, knowing I shouldn't. He had drug problems and issues resulting from those drug problems. But being the insecure and controlling person that I was, I believed I could mold him into the man that I thought he should be. Well, as you can imagine, that didn't work. It wasn't until much later in life that I realized you can't change other people. So after 4 years of a lonely marriage, I decided that 4 dogs and 3 birds were not enough creatures to take care of. I thought a baby would fill the hole in my life and maybe fix my marriage. So enter Skylar. He was my little buddy. We did everything together, and I adored him. Unfortunately, having Skylar did not fix my marriage, and it continued to deteriorate until we separated when Skylar was 5. One of the biggest reasons I wanted out of my marriage was because of my former husband's drug use, and I didn't want Skylar exposed to it. What I didn't realize at the time was that I just transferred my codependent and enabling behaviors from my former husband to my son. When we separated, Skylar was in kindergarten and he assimilated well into his new school. He had a wonderful teacher and a great kindergarten year. First grade, however, was a much different story. His teacher was new to teaching and Skylar was struggling with reading. He would come home from school in tears, telling me that the teacher yelled at him all the time and he just felt stupid. Of course, I knew that he wasn't stupid, but he was definitely struggling and I wanted to do all I could to help him. I had him tested and he was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. Because of that diagnosis, we were able to get him some additional resources from the school system, which helped. After debating on whether I should put him on medication, I decided to give it a try. It did seem to help him with his schoolwork, but it created other problems for him. He developed headaches, he didn't eat well, and it made him feel funny. But with the additional resource help at school and the medication, he was able to get through elementary school. Now, as a responsible parent, I responded to his issues appropriately. However, it fueled my enabling because from the time he was diagnosed, I went overboard to make things easier for him in all situations rather than letting him learn from his struggles. While I made sure he had tutors and other resources to help him through school, I didn't hold him accountable for getting his schoolwork done. When it came to school projects, I did more of the work than he did to ensure that he passed. Maybe this subconsciously gave him the message that I didn't think he was smart enough to do it himself. He was smart enough, however, to take full advantage of my willingness to be his crutch. I remember one 8th or 9th grade science project that Terry and I actually did for Skylar rather than just providing guidance and letting him do the work. Terry and I were extremely proud because we got an A on that project. When Skylar was in 5th grade, I purchased a home for us that took us into a neighboring school district. While I let him finish 5th grade at his current school, I made him switch for middle school. Skylar always hated change, and this was yet another big change I put upon him. I took him away from the friends that he had grown up with and their parents, whom I knew, to a new school where neither he nor I knew anyone. He quickly fell in with a group of troubled kids, and I was not paying attention to him, his friends, or getting to know their families like I had been. Shortly after moving, I met Terry and was distracted with our relationship as well as establishing a relationship with his four children. And I wasn't sensitive to Skylar's issues with assimilating into a family of seven after spending 7 years as a family of two. Like many addicts, he started with marijuana at age 13, but moved to heroin at age 15. Apparently, at that time, heroin was more readily available and cheaper than marijuana. I think that's probably the same as it is today. I knew he most likely used marijuana because his father was a regular pot smoker, but I was unaware of the heroin addiction until he was almost 18. I always thought that drug addiction was merely a choice one made and not a disease. This is what made it difficult for me to tolerate my ex-husband's drug use, and leaving the marriage was my solution to his addiction. Prior to knowing about the heroin addiction, I spent many times at the hospital emergency room with Skylar while he went through withdrawals. I thought he had some mysterious stomach ailment because despite all the tests, the doctors could not tell me why he went through these periods of horrific cramping and nonstop vomiting. It wasn't until I knew he was a heroin user that I understood these were heroin withdrawals. Because I believed drug use was a choice and a behavioral issue, I was sure that if Skylar wanted to quit, he could. He just chose not to. Skylar and I would argue endlessly about this point, and he would say to me, exasperated, "You don't understand, Mom. You don't understand. There are voices in my head that won't let me quit." He was right. I didn't understand, nor did I begin to understand until the night I hit my bottom in utter despair. Now, before I tell you about the night I hit rock bottom, let me give you just a few of the highlights of our insanity with the hope that you may understand why my bottom was what it was. I'd also like you to know that during all of the chaos, my love for Skylar never wavered, and all I really wanted to do was help him. I hope you may also be able to recognize the negative sense of the term enabling that I employed so well during his active addiction. I already mentioned the numerous times at the hospital emergency room as he went through withdrawals. At 16, Skylar dropped out of school because he could no longer manage the pressure, and I no longer had the energy to battle it. He promised to get his diploma through an online program, but he didn't really care if he had his diploma or not. The sad truth is that I did as much or more of the work as Skylar so that he would have that piece of paper. I wanted it more than he did. He stole jewelry that was given to me by my mother and grandmother and pawned it. Because it wasn't jewelry that I wore often, I didn't realize for quite some time that it was gone. He also stole jewelry that I inherited from my sister who passed away and pawned that. This time, it was jewelry that I wear often, and it didn't take me long to realize it was gone. Skylar, of course, denied taking it, and it took me a month of badgering him that I knew he had stolen it for him to admit that he had. He also admitted that he had pawned the signet ring that Terry and I gave him for his eighth grade graduation. He took me to the pawn shop, and it took me another month to work through their process to buy my own jewelry back from them. My alternative would have been to report the jewelry stolen and have Skylar arrested. I wasn't able to do that then, again, enabling in a negative way. Knowing what I know now, I might have had him arrested in the hopes that feeling the consequence of his actions might have caused him to change sooner. That might have been positive enabling versus negative enabling. But Skylar immediately stole back and pawned his signet ring again for drug money. I was awakened at 4 o'clock one morning by the sound of EMTs rushing into my house. Skylar's best friend had overdosed on heroin and died in my home. Skylar and his other friends who were there at the time swore to me they didn't use heroin or know that Bruce used. I chose to believe the story they told me because it seemed easier in that moment than facing the truth. Denial was my drug of choice. In late 2006 and through mid-2007, Skylar and Terry's relationship deteriorated as Terry tried to be the disciplinarian that I wasn't. It got so bad that because Skylar threatened Terry's life on numerous occasions, Terry slept with a gun under his side of the bed. Skylar was given two cars and subsequently destroyed them both. I was the one laying out the money to fix them. I could give you all of the reasons I thought this was the right thing to do, but we all know it boils down to the fact that it was pure enabling and codependent behavior on my part. Skylar went to Peachford twice, with one of those a result of his taking an overdose of his sleeping medication. He was also in an outpatient program with Kaiser. But because he was not held accountable for his actions, those programs did not result in his desire to live a sober life. I was always setting boundaries that drugs were not allowed in my home if he wanted to live there. Yet because he knew I wouldn't follow through with making him leave, he constantly crossed that boundary, along with his friends that would come crash at our house because their families had the courage to make them leave. One morning, Terry called me at work to come home immediately because one of Skylar's friends was on our back porch, swaying back and forth with a needle in his hand. Terry was terrified, and I still wouldn't make Skylar leave. Finally, one night after catching Skylar shooting up in my home, I broke. Skylar and I spent the entire night crying and with me pleading with him to stop this craziness. I was at a loss for what to do to relieve his pain and mine. I loved him so much, but I was completely powerless to help him. I had tried so hard and for so long, but nothing helped. It only continued to get worse. Skylar asked me to give him the title to his car so he could pawn it for money to buy enough heroin to end things. All he wanted to do was die. Exhausted, I thought at that moment in the dark hours of the early morning that the only thing I could do was to give him the title to his car and let him do what he said he wanted to do. It was what he was begging me to do. So I told him I would. I couldn't believe that we had spiraled down to this point. You see, doing that would cause the very thing that I feared the most and kept me enabling and unable to set proper boundaries with Skylar, his death. That's when my journey towards understanding the disease of addiction began. Soon after I told him I would give him the car title, I snapped out of the horror of that thought. With renewed vigor, I managed to wear him down to the point that he agreed to go to Peachford one more time for help. While he was there, his psychiatrist called and talked with me in depth about opiate addiction and how it alters the brain chemistry. He discussed medications that are available which help block the opiate receptors in the brain and suggested that might be something to consider in Skylar's case. When I went to the website about the drug Suboxone, one of the opiate receptor blockers he recommended, I discovered a lot of information on the disease of addiction and what happens in the brain. The doctor at Peachford strongly recommended long-term inpatient treatment for Skylar and told me about MAR, which is Metro Atlanta Recovery Residences. I researched MAR as well as other long-term inpatient treatment programs. Because Skylar had been through outpatient programs in the past, I knew outpatient wasn't a viable option. I kept coming back to MAR because I really liked the idea of the 90-day minimum and the community aspect of their program made sense to me. Because I wanted to learn what else I could do to help myself and Skylar through this mess, I joined a Nar-Anon meeting. I found a woman's meeting at a local church in Sandy Springs. This group meets every Tuesday at noon. As a small illustration of how messed up I was over all this, I knew it was a women's only meeting, but that didn't really sink in. And because I was afraid to go to that first meeting by myself, I asked Terry to go with me. Not only does he do that, he holds up pictures for me. He did, and when we got there, it registered what a women's only meeting meant. Women only. But they were gracious enough to allow him to stay, and he was kind enough to stay there and be there for me during that first meeting. I found that each one of those women understood what I was going through, and through sharing their experiences, I began to learn how to take care of myself. Learn what it meant to detach with love and begin to set the boundaries that I hoped would enable Skylar to take responsibility for his own life and actions. This was the beginning of freedom for me. Now, as I said, I am codependent, and I didn't realize until then how confining and restrictive codependency is. I learned that no was a complete sentence, and I resolved myself to the fact that I would not let Skylar come back home from Peachford, but rather he needed to complete a long-term inpatient treatment program before I would consider allowing him back into my home. As I said, I'm codependent, and prior to this, I thought I had the power to fix Skylar and his problems. I also thought that if Skylar loved me enough, he would quit doing drugs and just grow up. Maybe if I helped him out of his jams, that would make him quit. However, I learned through Naranon that if I could take care and control of me and my actions, that my family and my life could and would be less insane. That trying to control another person's actions was just an illusion on my part, and that I was the only person I had the power to control. Well, to my surprise, it worked. Taking the necessary actions was hard, but it did work. The hardest part for me was learning how to detach with love and separate my actions as a parent into what was enabling behavior and what was appropriate behavior that would actually help Skylar. That by having the courage to tell him that he could no longer live with me until he went through a recovery program that would help him learn how to live his life without drugs or alcohol, I was finally helping him move in the right direction. Al-Anon and other organizations like it, such as Naranon, are wonderful organizations for guidance on how to detach, set boundaries, learn about, and practice the 12 steps. I truly believe they can work for everyone, and if everyone used the principles of the 12 steps as a guideline for their own life, the world would be a much better place for us all. I strongly encourage Skylar to check into the MAR program because through all of my research, I kept coming back to MAR, and I knew it was a sign from my higher power, God, that this was the right place for Skylar and for me. As you can imagine and probably have been through yourself, it was a battle getting him to go. He blew the first assessment interview he had. He wasn't ready to give in and thought he could find some other place to live the way he wanted to, since he could no longer live with me. Fortunately, about 4 weeks later, after he had exhausted all of his other options, he was granted another assessment interview. However, the folks at MAR were not really sure he was ready. I remember sitting outside of two of the counselors' office while they were in there talking with Skylar and praying harder than I had ever prayed before. Sorry, that they would allow Skylar in and he would accept. Well, my prayers were answered and he entered MAR on October 17th, 2007. Skylar was 19, almost 20 at that time. I was relieved for so many reasons, but especially for having that first couple of weeks where he was not allowed to call me. I knew he was safe and he had others to turn to besides me. MAR recommended that Terry and I join one of their family support groups. We took that advice and joined the group that meets at MAR every Tuesday night. It was one of the best decisions we made, and we still attend that group today. Similar to Al-Anon, this group helps us understand how to take care of ourselves, set boundaries, and live up to those boundaries. Just like the addict or alcoholic in recovery, we family members need to work our own recovery program. Addiction is truly a family disease and affects each of us who love the addict or alcoholic. After entering MAR, Skylar tested my resolve and my boundaries on two occasions. About 3 weeks after entering MAR, he received those dreaded phone privileges. Skylar and his house manager called me at work because Skylar was having a meltdown. Skylar told me that MAR was not the place for him and that his cravings were so bad he felt there was nothing they could do and he wanted to leave MAR. Well, here it was, prime opportunity for me to practice and draw upon my meeting experience. So I told Skylar that the decision to stay or leave MAR was totally his decision, but that he would have to figure out where he would go because he could not come home back to my house. I told him that I loved him, but that I felt that he was at the best place he could be and that I hoped he would work with his recovery community to get through the rough patches. My coming to rescue him, as I had done so many times in the past, was not the right answer. If he decided otherwise, then he should figure out his plan before he left Mar. A couple of hours later, he called me to tell me he was feeling better and he was going to a meeting. Now, I have to tell you, that was extremely hard for me, and I was shaking so badly when I hung up the phone. And the 2 hours between that first call and his calling me, tell me he was going to a meeting, were so terrifying. What would he do, and how would I react if he decided to leave? But knowing I had my support groups for backup, remembering their experiences, and having faith that setting the boundaries was the right answer, I did it. However, the very next day, Skylar called me about 4 o'clock in the afternoon without his house manager to tell me that he didn't want to stay at Mar, that he wanted to go to another facility in South Georgia. Well, this time I got mad. I told him that I was not going to drop everything to come running to get him from Mar and take him to another facility. I told him that I didn't believe another facility was the right answer, but if that's what he wanted to do, then he could make the necessary arrangements to get himself there and figure out how to pay for it, because I was done. I had done everything I could do for him, and getting him into Mar had stretched us to our financial limits. I told him that if he left Mar, not to call me, but instead just put a note in his wallet with my name and phone number and instructions to call me so I could bury him when they found him dead, because that's where he was headed. I knew he would die if he didn't work his recovery program, and I knew I couldn't work it for him or want it more than he did. Again, I was tested. Again, Skylar called me a couple hours later to tell me he was going to a meeting. He also said that this may not be the last time he called me about leaving Mar. With renewed courage, I told him that was fine, that I love him deeply, and that my answer each time would be the same. He never did call me again about leaving Mar, and our relationship began to recover, and he knew that Terry and I were working on our recovery as well, and that it wasn't just his problem. We found a common dialogue in our recovery paths that brought us back to a closeness we hadn't felt in so long. Skylar completed his 90 days and moved into Mar's extended recovery program. Unfortunately, my story does not have the happy ending we all pray for, and I have lived through what each of us parents fear the most. After about a month and a half in the extended recovery program, Skylar relapsed and died at the age of 20 on April 2nd, 2008, of an accidental heroin overdose after nearly 6 months of sobriety. I'm sure you must wonder how it is that I'm able to stand up here today after the absolute greatest loss of my life and talk with you about it. There are times I wonder about it by myself, and that's the reason I have it written down. But simply put, I get my strength and my faith from God, from Skylar, and from Terry. I promised Skylar on the day that I buried him that I would find purpose in all this. Terry and I are still and will always be in recovery. We continue to learn how to take care of ourselves and detach with love. We continue to educate ourselves on the disease of addiction and codependency, and I now better understand the role I played in Skylar's life. And most importantly, for our recovery and in Skylar's memory, we volunteer in the recovery community at Mar. You see, it's not only the addict or alcoholic who must recover, but those of us who love them the most and are most affected by their addiction. We must also spend our lives working our recovery program. Recovery is a path, not a destination. It should never end. Recovery doesn't make problems disappear or hardship and tragedy never happen, but recovery gives you the tools to work through problems and deal with the tragedies and hardships. Life is hard. Recovery takes work and commitment, but it does allow you to find peace and appreciate the joy in your life. If nothing changes, nothing changes. I can look myself in the mirror and know that I did everything that was within my control at the time to help my son through his recovery. I had no power to prevent his relapse. The bottom line to my message here is that you, as family members of addicts or alcoholics, must find a way to take care of yourself. You are the only one you can control through this nightmare called addiction. You need to have the support around you similar to the support your loved one gets in their treatment program. In these groups, you learn how to take care of yourself, how to detach with love, and you learn from the experiences of others. Sharing is so important. You are not alone, and you shouldn't suffer alone. There are many resources to find. Al-Anon has a website. Ridgeview, I'm sure, has resources and recommendations. Your church and synagogue has resources. You need to keep looking until you find a group that you are comfortable with and that works for you. Please understand that you are not the one equipped to help your loved one. You are in recovery too and must work on your own recovery program, just as your loved one must work on theirs. Even seemingly innocuous help can be hurtful, and here's an example of what I mean. A little more than 30 days before Skylar's overdose, Skylar asked me if it was possible for me to get a job, for him to get a job at my company. We have a call center, and he wanted a job as a call center agent. Now, he was currently working at Babies R Us, and he was doing well, but he wanted to make more money so he could better take care of his responsibilities. Rather than directing him back to his Mar community and his sponsor to decide if this was the best thing for him to do at that point in his recovery, I instead put him in touch with our recruiter, and he was hired. He also managed to keep his job at Babies R Us on the weekend. Now, here I am thinking that all this work is great, especially since he had never really been able to keep a job in the past. However, he was too early in his recovery, and he put his job before his recovery. Intellectually, he was working his program, but he didn't have it in his heart yet. He missed mandatory meetings and had stopped calling his sponsor. Because of not following MAR rules, he was asked to leave on March 31st. You see, they hold our loved ones accountable for their actions. To Skylar's credit, he took full responsibility for why he was asked to leave MAR and was checking into his other options, knowing that coming home to me was not a good option for either of us. However, he was far down the path of relapse at that point, and I think he thought he would just ease his pain and then get back on the path of recovery. Unfortunately, he did not survive his relapse. Now, I'm not racked with guilt over helping him to find a job, and I also know that relapse is a process that doesn't happen overnight. Skylar chose to use rather than call his sponsor or go to his community for help, and there was nothing I could have done to stop him. I merely bring it to your attention to remind you that you are not the one to help your loved one with their decisions through their recovery. That job belongs to their recovery community, meetings, and their sponsor. Remember, whatever the addict or alcoholic puts before their recovery, they will lose it, their recovery, and maybe even their life. When the addict or alcoholic tries to involve you in solving their problems, your response should be something along the lines of, "I know you'll figure it out," or "Have you discussed this with your sponsor or your community, because they are better equipped to help you with this than I am." If you see your loved one heading down the possible path of relapse, you can let them know you believe they are in an unsafe place and pray that they will recognize this as well and turn to their tools to stop the relapse process and get back on the path of recovery. But remember, it's totally out of your control. So through all of this, you keep hearing the words, "You have to take care of yourself." What does that really mean? Terry struggled with the meaning of this phrase, and quite frankly, I did too. At face value, it would seem like we should just be nice and pampering to ourselves, maybe have a spa day every now and then. However, I think he summed it up, Terry that is, best by defining the phrase as meaning modifying our behavior to influence a change in the behavior of the addict. He says we can either continue to be part of the problem or find a way to become part of the solution. By learning that we are the only ones we can control and setting appropriate boundaries, we stop being part of the problem and become part of the solution. Remember, if nothing changes, nothing changes. The difference is subtle but powerful. It is telling our loved ones that we will no longer participate in their addiction. We will participate in their recovery and will learn how to love them in a healthy way. The choice is then theirs to make. The Serenity Prayer is what I use to keep myself in check when I don't want to fall prey to my codependent behaviors in all sorts of situations, including figuring out how to detach with love when I need to. One of the counselors at Mar helped me to better understand the Serenity Prayer. I had a hard time understanding how I was supposed to know what I should accept and what I needed the courage to change, and this is what he told me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, people, places, and things. The courage to change the things I can, me, and the ever-important wisdom to know the difference. Another twist on the Serenity Prayer that I found in a business book of all places goes like this. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know it's me. I have to memorize that one. There are never guarantees that a loved one won't relapse, but I promise if you become part of the solution by ceasing to negatively enable, set and keep proper boundaries, your loved one will stand a much better chance of recovery. Again, remember, if nothing changes, nothing changes. The old way that didn't work before won't work now. I share our story with you in the hopes that we can save lives through our experiences. I urge you to find support and share your stories as appropriate to help yourself, your addict, and others who may not know where to go for help. I believe that when you are able to share your story, you've been able to get past the shame or embarrassment typically associated with addiction or alcoholism, and are at the point where your story is no longer a burden to you, but becomes a gift to be shared to help others. Elizabeth Smart said after confronting her abductor during his sentencing hearing that she is ready to start a beautiful chapter in her life, helping other child victims speak who can't speak for themselves or are still missing. She says, I think one of the biggest ways to overcome any trial in life, to heal from any kind of experience, is by helping those around you. By lifting those around you, you end up lifting yourself as well. That struck me, and that's why I'm here today sharing my story with you. Now, while my story puts the worst-case scenario in front of you, my wish is that you can see it as also a story of hope. It is a demonstration that when you take care of yourself and seek the support you need, you can survive this disease no matter what your loved one chooses to do. If you can learn how to appropriately respond to the effects of this disease with your loved one, you are doing what is in your control to help them. Stop participating in their addiction and start participating in their recovery. I am grateful that Skylar is at peace and that I don't have to hold my breath anymore, but I love him and miss him every single day. And I will forever be sad that he had to resort to drugs to cope with his short life. I am not ashamed of Skylar, nor unwilling to talk about his addiction and how it's affected us and still affects us. Skylar gave us the gift of recovery, and we share that gift in the hopes of keeping it ourselves. And if by sharing our story, we can help at least one of you understand better how to become part of the solution, and if we can save just one more life, then Skylar, Terry, and I are fulfilling our purpose. If sharing my story can help lift you up out of this nightmare, then I am lifted up as well. Thank you. Now I can see you. Thank you.
Take a few questions from the audience.
Sure. Everybody take a deep breath, because I know I was pretty heavy load on you. I've been at this for a long time, 6 years. It's been a little over 6 years since Skylar passed away, almost 7 years since we've been in our recovery program. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions. Nothing's off limits. I've pretty much bared all the dirty laundry here, so don't be afraid to ask me anything if I can be of help to you. My motives were always thinking if I did all this, I would make it easier for him, and he would quit. He'd get a job. He'd grow up. Didn't work. Believe me, if I could have fixed it, he'd be up here talking to you today, telling you his side of the story. I can assure you of that. I hope you'll remember our story and just continue working your program, because I've seen some amazing things happen. The promises, I've seen them fulfilled beyond people's wildest expectations. So don't figure out what your plan is. Let God do that for you, and I promise you it's going to be so much better than you ever imagined. I mean, even for me, you know, having lost my only child, the promises have been fulfilled for me as well. I mean, they really have. I've learned what peace and serenity is, and I've been able to find joy in my life. Doesn't mean I don't miss him every day. Doesn't mean I don't cry. It just means that by being here and helping someone else, number one, I get out of this neighborhood, which is not a safe neighborhood to be in. And I do it, you know, with the hopes that I can save a life. And if I've done that, then I fulfilled what I needed to do tonight. So thank you. All right. Well, we have to jump out. So if you have any questions, let me know. Because we have to go pick up our son at the airport. He's coming in for the weekend. So thank you. God bless you all.